From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made the last week of February this year. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate crimes, four transgender black women were murdered in the United States just in the last week. The Law Center says the murders are part of a national trend, and it's become a crisis for civil rights advocates. In 2016, the New York City Anti-Violence Project documented the murder of 23 transgender and gender nonconforming people. In recent years, the majority of murders of trans people have been women of color. But there are few headlines about this issue and about the fear that it creates. Our guests this hour will help us understand their perspective as we discuss challenges for the trans community of color. And let me go ahead and welcome our guests now. Rudy Lott is here. Rudy is a community liaison, among other things. It's great to have. Great to have you. Thank you for being
here.
Thank
you for having me.
Also here is Janelle Butler, community health specialist at the MOCA Center and community advocate. Janelle, welcome to you.
Good morning, Rochester.
Giselle Bonilla is here. I'm smiling because I've been smiling since meeting all of our guests already. Giselle Bonilla is a community liaison for the Victory Alliance at Strong Hospital. Giselle, welcome. Tell us what the Victory Alliance at Strong Hospital is.
Well, we're an HIV vaccine clinical research site, and we do basically try to find new ways to prevent HIV. So we look for individuals between the ages of 18 and 50, between the ages of 18 and 50, who are HIV negative, men and women. And our studies do compensate between the average of $750 over the course of a year.
Okay. And Bianca Castro is the lead compliance specialist for the Omni Group. Bianca, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
I want to start just kind of go around the table and ask our guests to kind of weigh in on just what the Southern Poverty Law Center says is a deeply concerning national trend. And let me go ahead and add to that with some numbers that we have from Think Progress Online. Think Progress had a piece outlining the concern that trans women of color are often left out of national conversations. Of the 16 trans and gender nonconforming people killed in 2015, of the 16, 13 were trans women of color. In 2014, only one of 11 trans women killed was white. So it is certainly on the radar of the Southern Poverty Law Center, of advocates, but often not, I'll be honest, often not in the media. This is not a conversation that we've had on this program. And let me just go around the table and ask, you know, your thoughts about that. Are there fears? Is there frustration in the community? How do you feel about that?
Well, being part of this community has always been a hard thing for people like us. And I think it has a lot to do with the way that we are raised up socially. And we just need things in progress to try to change that social attitude.
Okay. Let's go, continue around the table.
Definitely. I attest with what Rudy said. Being a black trans person in America right now is... We kind of, it's a running joke, but it's a lot of reality to it. You're like at the bottom of the totem pole. You know, there are so many discriminations against trans people, especially black trans people. There are a lot of hardships and that have to do with upbringing and community acceptance that keep trans people in this bubble with so many stigmas around, when no one ever has had an opportunity to sit down and explain the trans experience. So,
Giselle?
I'm just going to just say, I think as far as the media is concerned, I think it's because, and even within our community, no one cares about our lives. Our lives are less than to other people. We're looked like Janelle just said, we're looked at as part of something that's on the bottom of the totem pole, not just in, I would say, like the cisgender community, but also within our own gay community, our black gay community. We look as the odd person out, the entertainment.
In the black gay community.
Within our own community, we find discrimination.
Into two categories.
It's just, yes, we do. So it's a conversation to have, not just with a cisgender community, with, you know, straight people, but it's also a conversation to have with even within our own gay community.
I want to explore that a little bit more in a moment, but let me get Bianca's thoughts as well.
Definitely. With everything happening, it's very scary. There's a target on our backs, and no one's speaking up.
and it's very disheartening. I can literally walk outside my house and be attacked just for being me. So I think that we need to continue making sure that our voices are heard, making sure that we do not let this pass. Just a couple weeks ago, one of our own was attacked and left for dead. Yes. So it's very scary that I can literally walk in outside of my door and just be attacked for being me.
Can I ask each of you to kind of describe, if you would, your experience that I'm going back to what Janelle was saying, how you feel that discrimination happens for so many different reasons, and mm-hmm. And that you know, you described yourself as feeling like you're at the bottom of some kind of societal totem pole.
Definitely.
So let me ask all of you, and I'll start with Bianca, to kind of just describe what that has meant in your life.
It's meant that I've had to fight twice as hard than anyone else. Not only do I have to fight to be seen as a woman, I have to fight to be seen as an equal, and then I have to go above that because they're judging me and expecting something more. And I had to constantly fight to be heard. It's both bad and good because it pushes me to always do my best because I want to be seen, but I have to push so hard that sometimes it's kind of impossible to be seen because I'm always being judged on something that's impossible to reach.
Hmm. My experience is I'm going to be just really real about it. I've been blessed in a way where I haven't had to deal with a lot of discrimination from the cisgender community. And I mean, I guess you could say it's being caused, you know, you're able to blend in into the community.
Passing
but
privilege.
Not passing. Yes, passing privilege. But not all of us have passing privilege.
Well, let's define that for a listener. When you say passing privilege, you mean what?
I mean, a trans woman who looks like a cisgender woman to the eyes of other cisgender people. So I could walk and, you know, go out in the street and you know, to the normal eye, no one would really understand, you know, say, oh, that's a tranny, for lack of words, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But so I've been blessed in that kind of that way. But not all of us are blessed like that. Mm-hmm. So, and as far as us being on the bottom of the table, that's a real thing that we deal with every day. So, yeah.
Okay. Now, apart from not feeling discrimination, as you say, from the cis community,
mm-hmm.
you know, can you describe other kinds of discrimination that you've had to deal with?
I mean, I felt discrimination when I told them to piggyback on the black community, black gay community. I mean, I felt discrimination as far as me being transgender from the just the black community in general. But just to go on the black gay community, I mean, I felt like sometimes I'm pigeonholed as an image, as you know, I should fit in this one mold as being like this carbon copy of a Barbie doll or something like that, or I'm just here to entertain the other letters of the LGBT. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you know what I mean? It's like, you know, they look at you and all they see is your transition. They don't see the person behind the transition.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think my experience with discrimination is fair. I can definitely agree and attest to what both Bianca and Giselle mentioned. But my experience also behind being discriminated, I've always fought, like you said, a little harder to normalize who I am, to make sure that I talk to everyone that I come in contact with, to make sure that I play with the baby and I rub the dog. And those things that cisgender individuals just think, they don't even think about as something. It's a entire thought process in order to be normalized. And I feel like with the miseducation of trans people, that's why it's so taboo. We're miseducated. There aren't people out there. I mean, there are a few, but locally in our community, we want to fight more to be more present, to open the conversation up. So we thank you for allowing us to do this,
mm-hmm.
To open the conversation up and to allow people to see that we are normal people just as you are.
Yes. I feel like one of the things that we've been missing has been a lack of leadership on a more of a grand scale to really show that show other trans women that, you know, this is, you know, who you can be. This is, you know, I mean, every community has a carbon copy of a leader, but we don't. You know, but we have yes. upcoming leaders coming up.
Yes.
And you know, as far as Janet Mock, Laverne Cox. So,
yes.
yeah.
Okay. Rudy?
Well, for me, personally...
Do me a favor, get right on that microphone.
I'm sorry. Yeah, sure. For me, personally, getting some discrimination, I'm like Giselle, I happen to have been one of the fortunate ones. I didn't grow up with a lot of personal discrimination. I do feel for the girls who have, but the stuff that I've had to deal with over the years is stuff like going to fill out a job application and they're asking you for your gender all the time and things of that nature.
Well, I'm gonna ask you a question, because we're all not to single you out, but we're all similar in age. But you come from a day where things were even a little more taboo. So I'm sure you can find an experience. Could you tell us about an experience then and how things have changed?
Well, I guess I could. I remember when I first started transitioning, where a lot of the girls would get bottles thrown at them just for walking down the street. And I don't see that happening now. Mm-hmm. I see it's more, being trans is more accepting these days. The violence is still there, but it's not as prevalent as it once was.
How long ago was your transition?
About 20 years.
About 20 years. So yeah. A lot of change in 20 years.
Yeah.
But certainly, part of the point of this discussion this hour is certainly not enough, particularly in communities of color.
Definitely. Oh.
But nothing, a lot has changed, but a lot has changed.
Yes.
We will not specify that to communities of color.
Okay.
It is to the entire community. And a question that we have for the community is, who are our allies? Who do we lean on? You know, so.
Well, I want to talk about what it means to be an ally. And just think of this. This is, a story that I didn't see, but people are probably familiar with rainbow flag, pride flags.
Yes.
There's been a controversy. I'm sort of amazed, but this year, new shades have been added to the rainbow flag, black and brown. And the new flag debuted at the beginning of June, which is Pride Month, in Philadelphia, to expressively represent the black and brown members of the LGBTQ mm-hmm. community. And it was expressly meant to be more inclusive, and it sparked, you can read, backlash in the gay community to adding black and brown to the flag.
Yes, yes.
And so I guess that's some of what you were talking about.
Yes.
A lot of what she was talking about. I think that a flag should be a representation of who you're serving. So in Philadelphia, there is a huge LGBTQ community of color. And for so many things that have happened in reference to police brutality and medical negligence, so many things that were happening in their city, I think that it was imperative that they did this flag for them. And if it's something small as tweaking a color, if that makes you feel good, then I say go for it. I don't see where that's an issue.
May I speak?
Yeah.
I want to speak. I want to say that I've always felt this way about the gay community as large. You know, you have this huge umbrella of gay, and everybody falls under this umbrella in certain sections. And even in the white trans community, the people of color are separated from them. It's not a cohesive thing. And I find that to be sad. I mean, I do have some Caucasian friends, and I'm grateful for that. But on a large scale of it, it's still divided, and I don't understand that.
And Giselle, is that what we're talking about when we talk about, you know, the gay community at large and issues within the African-American gay community, the issues with the trans community and the broader gay community? Yeah.
Yeah. Just to piggyback on the flag,
yeah.
You know, the black and brown on the flag, I just find it just, why is there even an issue? I mean, LGBT flag, LGBT pride has always been very about inclusiveness and about everyone coming together. So why can't we not have a representation of our black, gay community? In fact, let's just school on the fact that Pride would not have existed if it was not for black transgender women. It would not, there would not be white gay men out in the street throwing up flags, tossing around in Speedos, if it was not for black trans women. So this is a conversation that needs to be had. This is history that needs to be taught to our younger community, maybe even our old community, because they seem to not know it themselves, have forgotten it.
But Giselle, can I just follow up with a question then for you, Giselle? Because what I don't want to do is paint the paint the picture that the majority of the LGBTQ community has been in support of or opposed to this new flag or hurtful to trans women of color, for example. I don't know, though. I mean, in your mind, do you think that is that? Yes, there were people who opposed, even in the gay community, who opposed the new flag, who haven't been helpful, but that's not the majority? Or do you think that's a bigger number than most people realize?
I think it's a bigger number than people realize. People are just not saying it. I just feel like a lot of people who probably really have a problem, their mindset is, why do we have to change it? What's the point? I mean, I don't get it. You know, that's that same kind of mentality they have when we have a separate Black Gay Pride from the regular Pride. They just say, why can't we just all come together? But the fact of the matter, and I agree, I believe in inclusion, and I believe, but at the same time, culturally, I'm just going to say it, white people, party different than Black people. We want a space where we can celebrate ourselves a lot of times, because when you're a Black trans woman or just a Black LGBT person, you go to Pride, sometimes you feel like alienated. You don't feel like you belong at all. So to have a space for our own is not saying, you know, that we don't want to be included. We just want our own our own little right to celebrate who we are, to celebrate ourselves. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I agree. So we will be having Black Pride, the second annual, this year. It's from the 9th through the 13th of August. So you guys check us out, Black Pride. But I think that there are so many larger issues in reference to Black trans people and us being a target outside of the flag.
Absolutely. And so let me just read from, I want to read a quote here and see what our guests think here. Lourdes Ashley Hunter is the executive director of the Trans Women of Color Collective out of Washington, D.C. And Lourdes Ashley Hunter told Think Progress, quote, "It's been very challenging. These murders are hitting close to home. Yes. We are seeing more and more young trans people affirm their identity and take agency over that. But we also see that it comes with a very high price." And Hunter's concern is that fewer trans people will take agency because they see the fear of violence as a deterrent to just expressing themselves. Let's go around the table. Do you agree with
can
that?
Can I just start? Yep, sorry,
go, yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to say a quick sidebar that trans violence and trans discrimination is nothing new. And it's something that's been going on for a very long time. It's just that we just got iPhones and Androids that we could record videos and we could see the discrimination.
Everything's social media.
That's what that is. And also, the reason why in my personal opinion, transgender rights have been so nowadays is so like out there is because of one reason only in my mind, Caitlyn Jenner. If Caitlyn Jenner did not come on the scene, a white trans woman who really doesn't really understand what it is to be transgender, then we really wouldn't even have, I would say, like a big outlet for.
Well, I agree, but I disagree in just the instance. There has been amazing African-American trans people fighting the fight. I think where I will give Caitlyn credit is for bringing awareness to trans people on a media level. Mm-hmm. So she brought awareness to trans on a media level, but in reference to her experience and her lifestyle. And this is a person who went how many years, how many marriages, and they transitioned as to where, you know, they've already kind of established a lifestyle and, you know, they kind of know the rules to their life. As to where when you're a young trans person, like I transitioned when I was 13 years old. So when you're a young trans person trying to figure it out going to school or trying to figure it out walking through the community, trying to look for simple employment to, you know, be able to progress like any normal teenager would, that's when I think it's imperative that people pay attention. And we need to raise awareness behind trans people and trans visibility because we're people just like everyone else.
Yeah. Let me see what Rudy and Bianca think of, especially when it comes to, you know, Rudy, you go back 20 years since your transition. As we say, a lot's changed. But here you have now this concern about violence and this concern among some national leaders that when people see this violence, they're maybe less likely to transition. Maybe they're less likely to live as their true selves. That they feel that there, in that quote, it comes with the price, and there's a concern about that. What do you think of that?
Well, I feel that we all have to make our own decisions. You know, there's a little good and bad in everything. We don't get what we need from the government as far as protection. You see, that was taken right off the table as soon as we got a new president. So I feel that we as a community needs to put things in place to protect ourselves. Like all the agencies that we have here, do things collectively to ensure that our new trans people or anybody that wants to even think about being trans can transition.
Okay, Bianca.
And kind of to piggyback off of what Giselle said, violence is nothing new. It's mm-hmm. just now that we have these outlets where we can show what's being happened to us because no one's speaking out about it. So it takes me getting attacked and being recorded for this to reach national news and for someone important to speak on it. When I started transition, I was 17 years old, and I was always taught if you go somewhere alone, have a weapon. I was carrying hammers, knives, kitchen forks, whatever I could to protect myself because I knew that if someone spooked my tea or knew that I was a trans woman, there's a possibility I could be attacked, murdered, raped, whatever. So I think that the issue of violence has always been there, and it's not going to stop until we start fighting back.
You were warned about that?
Transitioning from older girls that came before me, I was automatically warned, you either go in a group. If you're alone, have a weapon. And it's kind of sad that at 17, where I'm worried about if I'm going to college, where am I supposed to get a job? On top of transitioning, I have to worry about my safety just walking down the street grabbing an ice cream cone.
And Bianca, here's another thing that Think Progress points out. One reason that there's not as much awareness of this issue is because when there is violence, there's a lot of misgendering in the media.
A man was attacked, not a trans woman. They misgender us so much, it's ridiculous.
And not only do they misgender us, it's usually sometimes when we're the victim, they make it seem like it was our fault.
Oh, if we fight back and we end up beating up or hurting the people that attacked us, it looks like we were the aggressor.
Yeah.
And it's not like that. But if I'm attacked, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that I walk away with my life and unharmed.
So one thing that we do to bridge that gap in our community is I host, as well as the other girls, I work at the Mocha Center. So we host a trans support group, and it's called Living Authentically. Mm-hmm. It's from 4 to 6 on Mondays. We hosted a self-defense class where we had a gentleman who is in the Army.
A combat specialist.
He came in, and he told us ways to protect ourselves without hurting the attacker. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just really unfortunate where we have to be that calculated and even trying to defend ourselves,
just
wearing a target on our back.
Walking out the door, I just want to go run some errands, and I might not make it back home, or I might just end up in the hospital. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Very scary.
Well, so what I want to do is, after our only break of the hour, come back and talk about solutions then. Because one thing that Janelle was just talking about is resources that are available, and you know, mm-hmm. Rudy mentioned it as well, but are those resources enough? Are they, sort of widely understood that they're out there? Are they tied together? Are they working together? So what resources are there in our community? And we'll talk a bit more with our guests about their own individual experiences. I mean, you know, just watching Bianca's reaction to when I mentioned the way the media might misgender a victim of violence, you had a visceral reaction to that. I mean, you know,
yes, it's very disheartening that these numbers aren't being calculated, that our stories aren't being told properly, that we're being misgendered and swept under the rug. Any trans woman that's been attacked, you'll see a first article that says man attacked and murdered. And then in the story, it'll be she was a guy dressed up as a girl who was prostituting. They try to throw in her background and make it like seem okay because she was a prostitute that she was murdered. And I find it very disheartening and sickening that I had to be, or these women have to be kind of minimized to prostitutes and men in wigs.
Yes.
And it's very disheartening. It makes me angry.
Yeah. So after our break, we'll ask our guests, you know, what the experience of being misgendered is like and the kind mm-hmm. of damage that can do, apart from just, you know, maybe the way the media might misgender somebody after a high-profile violence case. Misgendering mm-hmm. happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what that can mean as well. So just much more with our guests in studio. Rudy Lott is a community liaison with CTSI and the Victory Alliance as well, and also talking to Janelle Butler, community health specialist at the Moca Center and a community advocate. Giselle Bonilla is a community liaison for the Victory Alliance at Strong Hospital. Bianca Castro, lead compliance specialist for the Omni Group. We'll get right back with it after our only break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Tuesday on The Next Connections. So what if Doctor Who is a woman? What if the Ghostbusters are women? What if James Bond is black? What if Santa Claus isn't white? Why is it that there is a backlash whenever these fictional characters are represented in certain ways? With Doctor Who, there hasn't been too much backlash, but there's been some. We'll discuss what all of that means in our culture, Tuesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me remind you again what brought us here for this discussion today. The Southern Poverty Law Center is urging the media to take much more seriously the issue of hate crimes against transgender women of color in the United States. And the Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate crimes, says murders are part of a national trend. We are on pace for a higher number of murders this year than last year. The New York City Anti-Violence Project documented the murder of 23 transgender and gender nonconforming people last year, and in recent years, the vast majority of those cases are women of color. So, for example, of the 16 trans and gender nonconforming people killed in 2015, 13 were trans women of color, and in 2014, 10 out of 11. So we're seeing the number of murders go up, and we're seeing a disproportionate number of women of color targeted in this community. So so that's the basis for the conversation this hour. And I know our guests wanted to pick up on the subject of misgendering. And I know Janelle Butler wanted to start there. You said you really kind of wanted to dig into how this can have an impact. Go ahead.
Misgendering, well, for the media, we'll start with the media. When you misgender an individual in the media, not only do you prevent people from being able to recognize if that's someone that they know, but it doesn't allow people to handle the situation in the best light, because that's not who most people would know that individual as. So I have lost several girlfriends and not even know, you know, if it wasn't through our community staying networked and connected, I would have never known that that was my friend who was murdered or killed because they misgendered her and put her surname in the article that nobody knew, you know, on that level as far as with media. In day-to-day community, I had a client that I took to an appointment to get a cosmetic procedure done. She's been a trans woman for about 7 years, and the doctor misgendered her. It threw her off so bad that she, you know, she was so worked up by it, because you're coming into a lobby full of strangers. You're already nervous about, you know, going into a surgery. And then you have the doctor come out and refer to you as Mr. So-and-so, you know. That's really, you know, really, 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 really bad. And on a smaller scale, how misgendering can be very dangerous. For whatever reason, cisgender, particularly African-American cisgender females, find it extremely amusing to misgender trans women. They find it's their ultimate goal in life to let other individuals know that, especially trans women with passing privilege, let everyone know that that is a trans person. And what I don't understand about that is it would have to take so much energy for you to identify somebody as trans, misgender them, and not have any facts behind it. Because when it all boils down, nobody knows what anybody has between their legs, you know. So that's one thing in reference to that. And then the danger that comes behind it. We're already in a state of urgency as far as with our protection. There are so many young guys or guys in general that just have this hooligan mentality in our community. So when you're walking up the street and a guy is like into you, and you have this woman who they didn't look at all for the last 10 years, she's going to want to misgender. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that do? Even if we are not, and I say all these factors because I never said the position of the trans woman. We're just trying to handle our business. 9 times out of 10, we're not even looking to entertain or talk to a guy. So now it went from the guy talking to you, the girl who is upset and needs everyone to know that you're trans, to now a physical attack is now inciting because you were walking to the store. So misgendering can be very hurtful, and mm-hmm. it can be extremely dangerous depending on what level it's being done.
I'd love to hear from all of you. Rudy, you want to weigh in on misgendering as well?
Well, I'm really where Janelle is at. It does seem, it is a problem. It is a problem, and I think we all share the same values when it comes to that. I really don't have much more to say to that.
Okay, all right. Bianca?
And as far as the media, again, I understand their job is to gain viewers. The job is to make sure that you're reading my article versus someone else and to have a wow factor. But misgendering, again, is so disrespectful to the person. Not only, like Janelle said, I don't know most of the girls in the community's biological or birth names. So I may have read an article where a man was stabbed and murdered on the street and not know that it was my friend. So now not only do I have to hear from someone else that my sister or trans brother is gone, I have to read this article where they're putting her history out there as if that matters or that's a reason that she should have been murdered, and to read the comments where they're all misgendering her. It's disheartening, and it's so disgusting.
And I feel also that your transition and who you are as a trans person is very private and intimate.
Mm-hmm.
It's something, you know, maybe for some cases, some people it's more obvious, but that doesn't mean it's someone's business to involve themselves in it.
Definitely.
You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And I say that because when you involve yourself in someone's personal business, let's speak very candidly. Women have abortions. Is this something that they tag on the back of their shirt and walk around and tell everybody? I had an abortion. No. So why is it so important to express to everyone else that that person is a trans person? How about we all air each other's skeletons and walk around and wear our things that we've been? That would be ridiculous. So give us the same respect mm-hmm. in minding your business that you would want in return in reference to your own skeletons.
Right.
Giselle?
I mean, Janelle just spoke so eloquently about the issue, and she just broke it down on every level. I just say, as far as the media goes, I feel like when the media misgenders a trans person, I think it creates the more stigma and creates mm-hmm. more discrimination, because then within our community, they think that it's okay for them to run around here and misgendering other transgender people. So, yeah.
And it starts from us not clearly knowing who our allies are. From birth, our parents, if two parents, our parents tell us that what we're doing is not right.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how boys act. That's not how girls act. We have to deal with that from birth. So you go through that not feeling supported or not feeling like anybody understands you. And that carries on into friendships. It carries on into business relationships, and it carries on to how you treat others. So nobody has openly stood up and said, this is a trans person, and I'm not going to let anything happen to this person and leave them alone. That's not a common thing for people to do, stand up to trans people. So we become an automatic victim, mm-hmm. no matter what. Who stands up for the trans person that's walking down the street or that's in the restaurant eating her lunch by herself? Who stands up for her? When you have a kid who can scream out a derogatory comment, it's to be excused because that's a child. You have the woman telling the waiter that you're trans. It could get so mixy
mm-hmm.
and not in a good way.
Explain mixy because not all the everyone understands
like,
mixy.
Like mixed up and confused. It could become a true domino effect in a chain of events that could happen, and all you wanted to do was get your bagel and coffee, you know?
All you wanted to do.
So when we talk about misgendering, a couple of things come to mind for me. One is a question, and one is a recollection of people ask often, you know, what are the shows that stand out to you? We did a show in February of 2014 about a suicide. Dr. V was her name, and she was a white trans woman. Mm-hmm. She was an inventor and a writer for Grantland on ESPN, which is now defunct, got interested in who this woman was. You know, how did she invent such and such sports equipment and stuff like that? And finds out that Dr. V was a trans woman. And this writer decided, well, that is the story.
Yes.
Not all this interesting personal background and, mm-hmm. you know, how did you invent this and what happened and what's your path? No, it was, the truth about Dr. V is Dr. V is a trans woman. And Dr. V begged the writer not to include that in the story, and the writer would not, and Dr. V took her own life. And that conversation stayed with me, because when you talk about misgendering, that is a remarkably dangerous thing, mm-hmm. because it's denying someone agency and their self, I'll never forget that. So when I hear
yes, that's a really.
And when I hear Janelle talking about, you know, possible impact and things getting all, I think you use the word mixy.
Yes.
And all the things that happen.
Hashtag mixy.
I think a lot of times when you are.
I'm learning a lot this hour, Janelle.
I think a lot of times when you're a transgender person, the people who, for instance, that gentleman, I mean, people look at you for just being transgender. They don't look at you for just being, you know, Giselle or being Janelle or Rudy. The trans is first. And then everything else comes after that. Mm-hmm. So,
well, this writer was so fascinating. It's like you said, Giselle. It's like you're not here to entertain people. You're here to just be a person in the community.
So he probably felt like he wasn't doing anything wrong.
Absolutely.
And that's the problem. He didn't know that he was doing anything wrong.
There were 15 editors. There were 15 editors that read that story before it got published. Mm. Nobody stepped in and said, not only do I have a problem with this, but by the way, one of ESPN's best baseball writers is a trans woman. Right. You might want to talk.
Because that's the news, and that's what Janelle was saying, when it's just no different than a woman just feeling the need to want to just blast out a transgender person's gender. It's no need for it. It's like laughs and giggles. It's a story.
It then ties into my original question. Who are our allies? Mm-hmm. Who can we lean on in our community that may not fall under the LGBTQ spectrum? We want to know, who are the people that are going to stand up and say, I'm not going to allow anything to happen to this trans community or that trans person? Who are you? Please come forward.
God.
That's important. Where do we belong in the community? As long as you know, we're able to express our talents through hair and makeup and beauty, we fall in a good, comfortable spot with cisgender females. As long as we can cook and provide and be a secret, we fall in a comfortable nook with cisgender men who have a fascination with trans women. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't do double the work at your place of employment, it's like you're both. You were that, and now you're this. I want you to do double the work, or else you just don't fall into the mold. You know, we want to know who has our back, who is standing up for trans people outside of the LGBTQ spectrum. What organizations, what companies, what people in legislation? Because it's time for our voices to be heard, and we need to have some urgency over making decisions that directly affect us and our community.
Well said.
Yes.
Thank you.
Drop the mic. The other thing that came to my mind when it came to misgendering and allies is, in reading about violence that impacts especially trans women of color, let's say there is an assault. Then someone needs medical attention, but you might not have what people in the articles I'm reading call culturally competent doctors. Or, as you said, you know, all of a sudden you have a doctor who's misgendering you. And, mm-hmm. and is there, so I guess I want to ask first, is there already some hesitation or reluctance or concern among trans people, trans women of color, in just going to the doctor in general, mm-hmm. if you don't know, you know, that? And then if you've been attacked, I can't imagine what it would mean to then go through that on top of being the victim of an attack.
Definitely.
It plays, it's a huge cycle. So you think lack of support from home, social anxiety, which then trickles over into lack of education, because if you're socially awkward, you don't want to go to school. So then how does that allow you to get the type of career that you can provide for yourself? So what do? You survive. Trans people have been overly sexualized since the beginning of time. What do you want to see when you see a trans person? You want to see breasts. You want to see, you know, it's about what the trans woman looks like. So that then trickles so many different effects, cause and effects, which puts a lot of trans people in to, most would call it prostitution. Most would call it escorting.
Sex work.
I call it sex work. I call it survival sex. They have to do what they have to do to survive. And, with all of those other social injustices, it puts them in a really bad situation where they seek comfort through drugs and sex work. And people don't realize that that starts at home. When you don't feel accepted from your parents, you don't feel accepted from your teachers, you adapt things like, well, I like this about you, even though I know you don't like me. So those are the people that you gravitate through life, and you grow up and realize you didn't have a lick of support. It then puts you into a really, really, it can put you in one or two ways. A really bad situation, or you can fight and persevere and overcome your obstacles like all of us did and that we're continuing to do. And that's why we motivate other trans women in our community and across the country to keep pushing forward.
You said, though, for people in the workplace, you got to work twice as hard sometimes.
Yes,
I'll never forget a conversation I had with a pretty prominent member of the community, but again, this was kind of in passing. It wasn't on the show, so I won't reveal who said it, but he said to me, I was told as a young African-American boy, you're going to have to work twice as hard, but you can do it, and then you'll get by. And he said, eventually I decided, why do I have to work twice? Why can't I just work 100%?
Yes.
Why can't I work just as hard, give it my all, but not feel like if I'm not working 80 hours a week, you know, then I'm not doing what I need to do? Why do we have a society where that's... So, that just, you know, Janelle's comment there about the workplace made me think of that. Let me also just kind of go around the table and just ask how all of you feel about the issue of cultural competency. You know, just the question of what you're going to find when you go to a doctor, if you have medical emergency, that uncertainty. You know, kind of, Bianca, some thoughts on that?
I had an incident where I was attacked in Buffalo, and I had to go to the emergency room. The thought didn't cross my mind because I'm there to seek help. And I was literally, I was in and out of consciousness. I woke up and I was in the hospital bed and I was already in a gown. And the nurse came to me. She was like, hello. And I had breasts at the time. She said, what's your name? I was like, Bianca. Went through the logistics. And then she said, well, I need you to pee in this cup. You need a pregnancy test. I was like, well, I don't need that. I know I'm not pregnant. So I didn't get into it. On top of that, my eye's bleeding. I needed stitches. So she was like, oh, no, I need you to pee. And she was so urgent about getting me to pee. And I was like, I'm transgender. She was like, you're what? I was like, and I told her I had male genitalia still. And she was like, why?
She said, why?
Why? And I'm looking at her like.
That was the response?
That was her response. And then while my eye is bleeding, needed stitches. And I was like, I'm a transsexual. And she said, what's that? I was like, you really don't know what a transsexual is?
How long ago was this?
When did this happen? Three years ago?
So just recently.
3 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I looked at her and I was like, well, I'm transgender. That means I'm transitioning. She was like, oh, and she had this puzzled look on her face. She was like, but your ID says female. I was like, I know. She was like, your name's Bianca. I know. So can we get on with the stitching? Like, and then they ended up transferring me to another hospital because they couldn't help me. So it was just a big fiasco, and it makes you not want to go places. Like, now I have to worry about them asking questions that don't pertain to my injury.
Yes.
I don't need a pregnancy test. Hurry up and stitch my eye closed.
When was your last menstrual?
and Bianca, I did not know your that personal size. So I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to try.
No,
to,
it's okay.
Sorry about that. Rudy and Giselle, you want to add?
I think it, especially when it comes to the health provider, it starts with education.
Mm-hmm.
People having the know-how and the understanding of what, you know, the different healthcare needs of a transgender person. So, I mean, I mean, we are not our body parts. I mean, I think I heard Laverne Cox say that one time. We are not our body parts. So, for instance, when Bianca went to get a treatment, the treatment that, the care that she needed had nothing to do with her genitalia. But why was that even a question? Why exactly. Why was that even something that even matter? Because I feel like a lot of times, and I think they do it to everybody. I feel like if you have a certain genitalia, you have to be a certain way. So they, you know, I think in this world, I think they make, you know, we are our body parts. But that should not be the case.
And then another add-on is when I told her I had male genitalia, she said, well, your bracelet can't say female just in case someone has to check you and you have male genitalia. So instantly I was like, well, why does that even matter? Again, you're not checking for my genitalia. You're checking because my eye is literally slashed open. Mm-hmm. So it was just a big, it was very mixy.
there's that. I'm learning a lot this hour.
Mixy.
Very mixy.
Before I grab a phone call, Rudy, any thoughts on this particular issue?
No, the girls have covered it quite well.
let me get Kim and Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Kim.
Hi, Kim. Yes, hi. Awesome segment, by the way. This is fantastic. I love that we're getting a light on this subject. I have a very good friend. His name is Mariah, and she identifies as a lesbian. She's bisexual, but that's what she identifies currently as. And she's African-American, and she found out recently that a couple of new acquaintances were very disappointed when they found out that she wasn't trans. Like, they expected her to be this trans male, and when she informed them that, no, she's just a lesbian, they were very disappointed. And she said that she felt like a collectible to them. Like, they were just trying to add to their little, like, group of, hey, we have this transgender friend of ours. And I just wanted to know if anybody on the panel has felt like that. And also to say, I'm really sorry if you have. If you want regular, normal friends, I will be your friend. As long as you're not a horrible person. Like, that's my requirement.
Kim, you are so sweet.
Yes. Thank you.
Kim, thank you for the phone call. I'll let them kind of answer that. So she's saying her friends or these people that she knew were almost using this idea that, well, now I have a trans friend, so mm-hmm. my status increases, as opposed to building a real relationship.
Definitely. Yes. You're looked at as the pretty girl who's a trainee who can do makeup and hair. Let me have her on our team because she's a bad bitch. And then,
That's all right. We're going to let that one go, I think, but that's okay.
Oh, I'm so sorry. But she's the bad girl, and let me have her on my team because, you know, she's pretty and this, and she has her boobs done, and she looks ultra sexy. But then the minute you get too much attention, like she said, they want to blare out that you're trans and use that against you. So the same reason I'm your friend is the same reason you want to air my dirty laundry or my business out to people.
I think it's a fact. I mean, what happens sometimes in our culture sometimes is social issues that we have become like mainstream and become really like pop culture like, and trans issues is like on the forefront right now. I mean, like maybe 10 years ago, I remember when like gay culture was that way, when it was what was that show with the four gay men, and they would dress people up, and after that it became like cool to be gay. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, everyone wanted a gay best friend and mm-hmm. stuff like that. The same thing that's happening here with trans people.
Yes, it goes back into what I mean as far as like, and what Giselle said, as far as fitting into two different molds. One of the main molds for people who are attracting or acquiring trans friends are they want entertainment. They find our life interesting. It's a walking, talking biography. We have an insight from both sides. This mm-hmm. is what they think. So I see how people gravitate towards or recruit trans people. But just in that show, whenever your show was going over and you're getting a standing ovation, they'll find a way to tomato your show.
Rudy, some thoughts on that? Some building friendships and real relationships?
Well, I think being yourself is a perfect way to build relationships and friendships. For me, that's how that works for me and myself. I don't put on airs and I'm anything else. And I live in a Main Street type world. I don't sit in the back of the bus, you know. So.
Well, we're down to about our last minute or so, and I think you heard you know, Janelle earlier, challenging listeners that, you know, who are going to be the allies? Who are going to proudly stand up and be allies? And so maybe some final thoughts from you just on that point, because that's why we're here. We're talking about a community that has been disproportionately targeted for violence, that might be holding back some people from living their true selves. And one of the challenges you were issuing is just let people know that you're a real ally.
Yes, definitely. Let people know that you're an ally. If you come into an experience with a trans person, do not make that person feel othered. Thank you, Kim, for calling in. You are my friend, and I love you. Also, something that we've been working on is a catering service, the three of us, and the name is Sister Soul Food, and we are coming up with a service that is for us, by us, and we want to serve the community and also give people job opportunities that may not have job opportunities that are trans.
Sister Soul Food.
Sisters Soul Food.
Sisters Hashtag. Soul Food. And, yes. And are you launched yet?
Our first weekend will be the first weekend in August.
All right.
And so, we will be tabling at the Black Pride Festival.
And the Black Pride Festival is the 9th through the 13th night, yes, coming up here. And where can people experience that?
It's at
Edgerton Park?
Edgerton Park.
Mm-hmm.
9th through the 13th of August coming up here. I want to thank...
Actual festival date is the...
I want to thank all of our guests. Anything you want to add there? Giselle, looks like you want to jump in there. No? All good there? Okay. Just want to make sure we're all clear on what's coming up with Black Pride. And
thank you so much for having us.
Listeners, thank you. Janelle, Giselle, Bianca, Rudy, thank you.
Thank you
for sharing your experiences. Very much appreciate that. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer.
Megan.
I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We're back with you Tuesday on Member Supported Public Radio.